Tech guys just are trying to fight humanity. They try to fight the way humans like stuff. And Spotify is trying to pivot to podcast memes video, which is insane.
It's a different thing, different medium.
People will always like audio stories.
Yeah.
I think it's like you're trying to fight the earth. You're trying to fight gravity.
What's the most teachable aspect of podcasting and what's the least teachable?
It is so much harder to teach someone who has no imagination how to have a creative idea than to teach a creative person to learn Excel.
I get the impression you're kind of living your dream career and like this is where you want to be.
Seeing the vision of where podcasting is going, as much as I do, I think it's a lack of imagination to think that we're all f***ed.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. If you've listened before, thanks for coming back. And if you are new here, my name is Francis Zierer. And on this show and the same named newsletter, I speak to creators about the craft and business of being a creator and what that even means. If you're not subscribed already, take a moment and click that subscribe button. Today, we are speaking with Eric Silver. Eric is a podcaster, podcast producer, and head of development at Multitude, a podcast studio and production company. One of the podcasts he hosts, alongside his spouse, Amanda McLaughlin, the CEO of Multitude, is Attach Your Resume, which I would call a sort of sister show to Creator Spotlight in that we talk about the same things. It is interviews with online creators about how their jobs work and how they got there. So today, Eric and I will be chatting about the craft and business of podcasting, about being a creator, and about what we've learned from interviewing creators. Eric, on Attach Your Resume, you start every interview with a non sequitur question. You ask Taylor Lorenz what kind of protein she likes best and how she likes to prepare it. So I have one for you.
Please.
Bagels, toasted or untoasted? And is it okay to scoop them?
Francis, it's really upsetting you would start with such an anti-Semitic remark. To just leave with
Well, I am Semitic. So.
No, okay. I don't know. Then this is a volleyball question. You're putting it out there. You're right. This is a very Semitic topic for us to start with. No, it's not okay to toast. And it's not about user error. Uh-huh. If people do need to toast, if you freeze a bagel, if you buy bad bagels, you need to toast them. The issue with toasting is that it flattens out the texture of bagels. Like the whole point of a bagel is that it's craggy and crinkly in all different directions. I put this on people who make bad bagels and let people make bad decisions. Like if there's anything I've learned from making stuff for other people, if you give them too many choices, they will make the wrong choice.
I really am a believer of that. I'm a big believer that we have too many choices. You know, when you see those pictures of like, you know, Cuban grocery store and it's all there's a bunch of beans on the shelf, but it's only one brand. I think we need more of that. We need less brands of beans. We need less olive oils. Just give me the olive oil. Craggy and crinkly. Is that how you would describe your interview style?
Oh, that's a good idea. First of all, also do not let people scoop bagels. I live in New York. I think it's a blight.
Just only eat half the bagel. Just only eat half the bagel if you're going to do that.
Exactly. Or don't buy a bagel. Buy a bialy.
Buy a piece of toast.
We should not let LA dictate our entire lives in the similar ways that we should not let improv comedians dictate the communities of creatives that we have around us, because they're always manipulative. They're always terrible and manipulative. I'm so glad you started with this question, because the non sequiturs that I begin with is a very NPR trick. Like, I do not have formal audio training. I think a big thing of everything that we do at Multitude is that we are podcast first. We got into podcasting during the boom around Serial and Startup in 2013. And I'm like, I want to do this. And no one would teach us how. Like, it was impossible to get educated on how to be a podcaster, because it was all hoarded by public radio or big radio stations. And of course, like, you couldn't get an internship in NPR because you had to be only 6 months out of college or in college. And I was 23 at the time. I was so
You're an old man.
I'm so old. I was 23. So it's like, and then the only other way to do it was like go to the woods in New Hampshire and go to this like summer camp that would teach you how to make podcasts. That's true. I applied to it. I didn't get in. I felt like my world was gone because I couldn't learn how to do it. So it's like I just had to grab bits and pieces through experience and through doing this together and whatever was on the internet, which was very little. And of course, the NPR trick is always if you want someone to be comfortable on microphone, you ask them what they have for breakfast that morning. But you don't record it. You don't keep it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a boring question. It's just them to get comfortable. And then it's like, okay, great. And then we're going to start the interview and someone's going to like say something tepid about a Middle East.
But you don't want it to be tepid. You want it to be cold. You want that cold open.
Oh, right. Well, that's why I do it, because I ask an actual good question that could be for tape, like I do because I was a summer camp counselor. So icebreakers are the most important thing possible. It also, I do this in my undergrad podcasting class that I teach at Stony Brook University. Yeah. I start out by asking everyone if they could have a tap that had infinite liquid in it, what would it be? And the course, because Stony Brook is just like scaling up their film program, which is what podcasting is in. It's kind of like general storytelling. And so a lot of students use this as their like public speaking credit, which is something they have to do for like their common core at Stony Brook.
Tell me more about the Stony Brook thing. So you started last semester was your first semester as an adjunct teaching, I think intro to podcasting and maybe one other thing at Stony Brook. I don't think it's your first time as a teacher. I'm pretty sure you were a teacher like 10 years ago too.
Yeah.
But this is your first time teaching podcasting for college students.
Yes. So I was a camp counselor for a very long time, for 15 and 16 year olds at my summer camp that I went to.
I learned a lot about this in the 100th episode of Defectors podcast.
Oh yeah. We're going to talk about, if they allow two Jews on a podcast, which they never do, big podcasting never allows people to do it. That's why Rowan Zioli and I on Attach Your Resume just went off talking about Jewish stuff and Dungeons and Dragons. Right. Okay. So I was summer camp counselor for a while. I was a high school English teacher. That's what I did after college. My dad told me my dramatic literature degree that I was getting at NYU at the time wouldn't work. So I did a 5-year English and English education BA MA. The first time they did that too, which was great, but like they also told me I couldn't graduate because they didn't count the credits correctly. So it's a lot of me yelling at institutions.
And you can't count because you're an English major.
No, I'm so stupid. Yeah. Why would I do it? I had to call them every day for 2 months before they just let me do it. Again, like the thing that I think comes up a lot in my life is I try to grab opportunities and institutions fuck me, and then I yell at them until they fix it. So yeah, I was a high school English teacher. I did it for a year. I got really disillusioned by it, by like just the union, the teachers unions was wonderful. Everything else other than teaching in the classroom was terrible and soul sucking. Especially I got incredibly disillusioned when there was a grade fixing scandal at my high school.
Oh wow.
There was a lot going on. So I love teaching, and we teach classes at Multitude, and I like doing it. I think it's part of also my vibes. It's like a game master.
What do you teach at Multitude? Like, what's the structure of that? How often is it like one-off panels, et cetera?
Yeah, we offered a bunch of classes because a lot of people who used to work at like public radio stations then got laid off and tried to be independent were like fleecing people for like $1,500 for like 3 hours of bad instruction. I'm like, that's not nice. So we've rolled out some classes before for people to do at Multitude. We have tons of free resources on our website. We do a ton of panels at conventions, at PodCon and PodCon 2, RIP, hope you come back, and at Podcast Movement, which has been really nice, being like really clear-eyed for creators so many people, because Podcast Movement is like the podcast convention, but it's also like a business convention. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of, you know, entrepreneurial content grifters there. So like trying to give people the straight dope is always what we're trying to do. Yeah. And I love it. I really love it. I love making an intriguing and fun slideshow
What's the most teachable aspect of podcasting, and what's the least teachable?
Oh, metadata is the most teachable aspect of podcasting. All of the stuff I do as head of development, which means pretty much like pre-production. Mm-hmm. This, you might enjoy this. My job used to be head of creative. My job title was
I know
head of
it's
creative.
Still that on your website, by
on
the way.
Oh, it's on the website. We have to fix
you
our website.
Change that.
I have to fix it. Amanda, fix
right
the
now.
Website. My name is head of creative on the website. And it still says it on my business cards, which is my fault. I bought
you printed
like 5,000. I printed too many. Yeah, exactly. it used to be head of creative, but nobody wanted to listen to me because when someone hires a podcast production company, they want to do all the creative. Yeah. Right. But head of development is my job. And I feel like I'm back teaching again because all I do is I make little worksheets for people to figure out their metadata, to write their show description, to make a template for their episode description.
So that's incredibly, you're just giving them here's the lines, now color within them.
Yes, but like, I love a worksheet. Worksheets are great. I love the little Mad Libs where you put your little ideas into it.
Yeah, I was also a great standardized tester in quiz school.
Exactly. Yeah, fill it in. C, D, A, C, C, C. Don't feel bad if it's a bunch of answers in a row. They're trying to mess with you. It's fine. That's the teaching that we've been doing casually.
Yeah.
But now formally, Amanda and I have been teaching at Stony Brook for this whole calendar year. We are affiliated with like the podcast incubator, which is for the quote unquote for grad students.
Yeah.
Where people, you know, which has been going on for a few years now, but this is the first year that Amanda and I have been doing it. But I got the opportunity to actually teach undergrads this year at Stony Brook. So I get in my 2019 used Honda CRV that I bought in November.
And what's the license plate number on that?
His name is Donkey Car, and that's the least I can tell you.
One thing that's interesting to me, if you're teaching these undergrads, yes. These are people to whom podcasting is such a normal thing. Like I personally did not start, I listen to plenty of podcasts now, but I didn't start listening to them until really 2020, like when the pandemic hit. Maybe end of 2019, I'd listen to one or two. But what's interesting, like, I'm curious what it's like teaching podcasts to people who are like, who understand the podcast as a medium, probably much more than your average, like, person who's 10 years older.
That's the hardest thing about teaching podcasting.
Hey, if you're enjoying this episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss next week's episode. We release a new one every Thursday. Enjoy.
Literally right now on Airfest, which they call it like the Sundance of podcasting. Mm-hmm. Like it's very artsy, but you know, there's a business summit that happens the day before and the entire summit was about YouTube and video podcasting. And I'm like, that's not what podcasting is. You just fell for what tech companies are trying to do. You fell for Spotify for their 10x return on their business, for their bottom line. Yeah. They're single white femaling YouTube and you fell for it. So the thing that I'm trying to get across to everyone, not only these undergrads, is like podcasting. You know what podcasting is. But when I mean podcasting and the skills I'm trying to teach you is audio storytelling.
Because they might think it's video first is what you're
exactly.
saying.
Exactly. Yeah. And like I have no problem with video podcasting. I think it's essential for the internet that we currently live in. I think that video clips like the ones you put on Reels and on TikTok that we have really, really good editors at Multitude to do because they're incredibly talented and it's a whole other skill set. It is an extension of the thing that podcasting does the best, which is word of mouth, recommending a show to someone else, to send them the clip and be like, this is the show I was telling you about. And now you have this little taste of what you're going to enjoy.
Wait, I want to talk about video podcasting for a second. So this podcast is video right now. Shout out to you, the listener, who might also be the watcher watching this on YouTube right now.
However you consume is fine. You're valid. Again, it's not about much like the bagel. It's not about the user. You do you.
Well, so,
you do you
okay.
with what you have.
So you are an audio guy. All the podcasts you guys do are audio. You do release some video clips. On a recent episode of Attach Your Resume, you guys kind of ripped into the idea of a video podcast in the same way you just did, where it's like it's a different thing, different medium, which I agree. You also wrote a piece about this for the Multitude blog in January, which I'll read one little quote from here, and then you can speak on it. Honestly, I don't want to be a YouTuber. That's why I became a podcaster. We do record video for some shows at Multitude, but only for clips that we share on social media. Releasing the full video of a podcast recording feels like encroaching on a different medium, a medium I never wanted to do. The one other thing I'll say is around that same time, you recorded a video. You recorded the intro for one of your interviews and you did two takes. It's a video titled Audio is Different from Video. So we filmed our audio recording to show you. And I'm going to call bullshit on that one a little bit because you guys purposefully half-assed it. You've got the nice studio. You're in it right now. And look, you show up and you make the point of like you forgot it was video. So you're dressed for the dressed for the gym. And it's not lit well. So I think You're making a point of like
I see what you're saying, but I also want to push back and say I did not half-ass it. I 100% forgot we were doing this. And I was dressed for the gym. I was also showing how we usually record stuff.
Yes.
And like we were recording, I'm on the video set that
you're
we
showing
have
this,
specifically.
Right now you are, but that was like how you would record an audio.
That is how where we usually
okay.
record
yeah.
the intros of these two. And it was important that we did two back to back because it's like something that comes out as 7 minutes of audio was like a 20-minute video.
Yeah.
That's more what I you're 100% correct. I look much better now than I did in the thing that I did in that article, but I was more showing what we usually look like.
Yeah.
Okay. When we record
these. You're showing the difference.
Exactly.
Yeah. And which I mean, when I do a call for work and it's like a Google Meet versus and I'm like sitting where I'm sitting right now versus when it's, you know, just a phone call and I'm pacing up and down the length of my apartment, like it's different. It's a different vibe. And honestly, like I probably get more like crazy in the zone focused when I'm not, because right now, like I'm looking at you, but I'm also looking at my face and seeing 100%. Myself talk because I'm vain.
I keep looking at Gobbles behind me.
Yeah.
My main man Gobbles, so, the turkey Beanie Baby that my mom bought for Thanksgiving 15 years ago, bequeathed to me because we hosted Thanksgiving.
That's an old turkey. I can't believe you haven't used it for Thanksgiving, eaten it for Thanksgiving.
No, he sits on the table every time. We pardon him every single year.
that's good. Okay, you kind of already answered this, but I do want to ask one more of the questions that you always ask on your show. Which is how do you describe
your
job? Oh, wait.
Let me say more about the thing that you meant. Because I derailed us by talking about Gobbles.
Go ahead.
That's my fault. I have a lot of respect for video creators.
Yeah.
Not only social media creators. When I went to college, I was put on the freshman floor of Bohemians and Rebels. It was like this specialized thing. NYU, baby. That's what we do. But it's just like it was just a freshman grouping thing. And I ended up being on a floor with a lot of people who were in Tisch. Which is the film and acting school.
Well, this is too. Sorry to interrupt. Now I'm interrupting you, but like when you say that, and I think of my college experience where I studied rhetoric and media, and I was kind of more on the media criticism side of it. But the film, in as much as we had a film program, it was also part of that. And what you were just saying about that Stony Brook, the podcast program, being part of the film program, it's like these things are always just meshed together as like media.
NYU specifically really divides it out because it's like NYU and lots of people like only donating to the specific schools they're a part of. Like I was in the College of Arts and Science that was like just all the other majors they do at regular schools that no one cared about. But all my friends were in Tisch and they were film majors. And like I know because I've been on their sets and I've seen them work and all this stuff. And I still have friends who work in the film industry, both in the digital side and in the movies film industry and the TV's film industry. I know how hard it is. Amanda, our CEO, was a teenage YouTuber and she has a lot of YouTube friends. I know how hard it goes into. I know all the work that goes into actually making video. That's why all of the most popular YouTubers now make documentary length videos and release them once a year. H Bomber Guy and Defunct Land. Like that's their whole strategy and their Patreon support it. I know how much work goes into it. I do not know how to do it. Amanda set this whole thing up for me and I know audio and I understand that they're two mediums and Spotify is trying to convince YouTubers, not podcasters. They're convincing YouTubers to upload their videos on Spotify and get it off the RSS feed so they can own the whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
Podcasters, they don't care anymore. They squeezed as much out of podcasting as possible over the last few years by acquiring all those companies in 2018, 2019, like Gimlet and The Ringer and what became Megaphone and Anchor
Anchor. You used to work a decade ago.
Where I used to work. Yeah. When it was still Audio Twitter, I used to work there. And give Joe Rogan and Call Her Daddy all this money. And then they're like, nah, that's actually not 10x enough for us.
Yeah.
So then now they're like, who cares? And podcasters are getting caught in the crossfire and the actual medium is getting hollowed out from the inside by Spotify trying to pivot everyone's thought to think podcast means video, which is insane.
Yeah, which I mean, a big part of that too is the clip industrial complex, right? And like the ads that look like a podcast, but they're not. Do you think this is a battle that can be won? Like, you're talking to your students who think a podcast is video. Like, in 10 years, is the audio-only podcast something quaint?
I don't know. I think maybe I don't think of it even on those on that scale.
Yeah. Well,
because it's like, well, we won. They wanted a podcast. They wanted a podcast so badly that they VC'd they were into it. People will always like audio stories.
Yeah.
I think it's like you're trying to fight the earth. You're trying to fight gravity. You cannot fight the fact that some people, especially when we're getting inundated with video more than ever, I think more people will intentionally choose not to use their eyes to look at video and want audio-only stories.
I mean, I usually listen to podcasts when I'm, like, on a walk or washing the dishes or making lunch or whatever. And maybe I do this with the Colin and Samira podcast, which I like to watch. They teach me a lot about creator stuff. I have a spice rack above, like, my kitchen counter, and I'll put it on the spice rack while I'm, like, making lunch, and I'll watch, like, 10, 15 minutes of it. But then once I'm eating my lunch, I'm probably, like, looking out the window and just listening to it.
Tech guys, and we're seeing this more and more with the way the world works, tech guys just are trying to fight humanity. They try to fight the way humans like stuff.
Yeah.
So, I just don't think they're ever going to convince everyone that audio stories are stupid. The evolved form of video, the evolved form of audio is video. You just can't do it. Yeah. It's impossible.
No, I agree. I mean, I use for this podcast, my initial instinct was like, I don't want to do video. It's too much. I'll have to like be presentable.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it'll work, etc. It's hard to control guests. I mean, you've got great video, but I've had people on who make YouTube videos, and have amazing, beautiful setups, but then on the podcast, they just show up not with that amazing setup. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe they don't respect this show, or they don't, maybe they just think a podcast is something else, but it's just something that it's hard to control. But all that
I want to say, I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
I struggle with this all the time. I want to put my best foot forward. If I'm a podcast professional, the least I can do is bring all of my expertise to this.
Exactly.
So I'm with you, but I feel everything you just said, I think about all the time.
Well, I was advised to do it and put it on YouTube for distribution, and I was given the resources to buy a nice camera. So, that makes the decision a bit easier, and I don't regret it. It's taught me a new skill. I think probably today we're going to break 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which it's taken almost a year, but we didn't even have proper video for like the first 6 months, whatever. But I don't regret it. But I agree that it's a different thing. And just this week, as we record this on my other podcast, Tasteland, our guest was sick, and so was camera off. And it was a great episode. And I have to wonder, me and my co-hosts were both camera on, but I have to wonder, was this episode partially better because our guest was camera off, and that freed up her vibe? I don't know, but maybe.
I think the thing that you have done really well on the show, but also is very difficult because it is very fragile, is when you set up a pipeline for content, if one thing breaks, then it all breaks. that video is going to look really weird uploading it to YouTube.
Yeah.
And we do upload our video. We do upload our podcast to YouTube, but it's like, it's just like an image with the audio,
which is what we do for Tasteland, my other podcast too, and it's like we fully ignore that, kind of. We just put it up there and don't really think about it. Some weeks, I think this last week, we got like 150 listens across the archive there. People are still doing it, but it's
no, I'm with you though, but it's like I care about podcasts, so I play in the podcast space. It's not just about the art, it's about the tech. I upload it to YouTube because I can, motherfucker. That's why RSS feeds are wonderful. I once described the RSS feed as ancient, and my co-teacher was like, why did you call it ancient? You don't like it? I'm like, no, it's ancient.
I
like
revere it.
Quinoa is ancient. Yeah. Like the pulley is ancient.
I mean, what? It's like is it more than a quarter century old? Can we say that?
I think that's 100% true. Yeah. Or at least it's coming up on.
We can speak of it in terms of partial centuries, to be sure.
Yeah, yeah, and like that's why it's good. It's like you can't mess with this.
Yeah.
So I can put it on whatever platform I want. The thing I like about podcasting, and the reason why I don't want to be a YouTuber, and also why I dabbled in streaming, but it's a similar issue, is that it's on a singular platform and has some sort of algorithmic nonsense.
The walled garden
that gets messed with by the corporate overlords. Mm-hmm. But like, so podcasting's greatest weakness, which is discovery, is also its greatest strength.
Yes.
Towards like protecting, future proofing itself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why Jack Conte started Patreon?
Why is it?
He says this all the time. You know, Jack Conte was
the CEO of Patreon. He's a musician.
Yeah.
You guys have had him on Attach Your Resume.
He cried. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And he's like a really he's a real artist guy. Mm-hmm. I know I should I've not tried a cape for a CEO, but like talk to Jack Conte for 5 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. I mean, on the Attach Your Resume episode, whether or not like he is a CEO. So whether he wants to think of himself as a CEO or not, he is. And he admits that. He's like, I still think of myself as like somebody who was an artist who made this thing because I needed it and it evolved into this thing. And like, so now I do have to deal with the consequences of that. But like, still what drives me is like making this thing for people like me to make a living.
In the earliest, in like early YouTube, when in a very okay go sort of way, Jack Conte, musician, made really high concept, really involved music videos. And he got like $13 from Google AdSense on a video that got like hundreds of thousands of views. And he put hundreds of hours into and hundreds, if not thousands of dollars into it. And he's like, what if we could figure out a way to pay artists? And then Patreon was born. Yeah. YouTube is still doing the same shit. Why would I participate in that? I don't even like video.
Well,
the
metaphor
much.
I use, or the analogy, whatever, is if you are only working within one walled garden platform that mm-hmm. where the incentive structure is ads based, like you are a sharecropper for that platform.
Exactly.
You don't own the land. You just get a portion of the revenue you generate. I want to move on though to creators. How do you define the term creator?
I mean, I think the way that everyone does, you know, just making someone who, I guess creator is usually like someone who makes stuff online, digital first. It can honestly be anything. I didn't realize for a while that when people were using, people did not like the term creator economy mm-hmm. because it was people who were on social media only started using creator economies to talk about them as well.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. We could debate until the cows come home if the person who makes TikToks only is a creator. I don't know. But like if they put the work in and they have to optimize it, I think they're a creator. Anyone who makes stuff online, the thing I guess that I hone in on is someone who makes their creative stuff online and is not trying to use it necessarily as IP stepping stone to go to Hollywood or LA. That's really the thing.
I think you're right. And I think another thing, a filter I kind of put on it as a way of focusing it is like they're creating content for an audience beyond their friends and family. Mm-hmm. So other people are probably also trying to monetize it. There's this great newsletter by Julia Alexander called Posting Nexus. And she wrote this amazing piece this week as we record this called Creators versus Posters, which I think is an excellent dichotomy that I need to absorb, where a creator is somebody who's like, who's making the thing that's meant to do more than just get the engagement on that platform. Whereas a poster is somebody who's working within the ad incentivized model where it's like, it's really not about the content. It's purely about the form. It's about like the rage bait. It's about like, you know, people will only look at this for 5 seconds, but it'll get a million likes. So that's a poster as opposed to a creator. So I agree with you there. How about what is podcasting? We kind of already described what a podcast is. It's an audio product.
Yeah.
Maybe you could go deeper there, but what is a podcast and what is podcasting?
A podcast is a audio first show that people can download and enjoy on their own podcast player of choice through the mechanism of RSS.
The magic of RSS.
The ancient magics of RSS. Podcasting, I think, has expanded, certainly, but I still think it has to do with the business and the practice of making those audio stories and whatever other things you attach to it to get people to listen to and download your podcast.
How does one be a good podcast guest?
That's a good question. Show up prepared. Just show up prepared, honestly, and put your best foot forward. Like the things that you're saying about it really bother me that people have shown up and not put their best foot forward. It's like, if I want you on, there's various things. I don't want you at 60%. Why would I want you at 60%? I think that there seems to be a misconception of why people think they come on as podcast guests. And it's always like, I'm famous, you're not, or we're friends, so I'm coming on your podcast. And it's like, no, we're having a mutual exchange.
Yeah.
Like, I'm giving you something to do and you get exposed to my audience. And in exchange, you're helping me make media for my show. And I, what I think bothers me the most is when people don't share the fact that they were on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, it's for free.
It's insulting.
It's really insulting.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, creators of various sizes, the biggest creators I've had and the smallest creators I've had on my shows, have decided not to share that they were on my podcast. And I'm like, why? Well, there has to be something.
Like, do you want me dead? Like,
yeah, it's, or, like, why do you hate me?
But
I spent,
like,
all this time making the show.
Did I say
for
something
you?
Wrong? Like, did you feel like you didn't put your best foot forward and now you feel embarrassed about that? Like, there's always, like, there are reasons.
Yeah, it's always a reason, but all it does is hurt me. Because you got the thing you wanted, which is exposure to my audience, and I get nothing. I get to say you were on my show, which I guess if it was only the most famous people I've had on my show, I'd be like, okay, there's a level of ego here. There's so much, like, social climbing involved in our industry and media in general. I will not be mad about it, but I will understand.
It's like an unequal exchange of content capital.
Right. So, like, the thing I always say is, like, if I invite you on my show, I will ask to go on your show and put the ball in your court. And if you choose not to do it, it's like, you obviously think you're better than me. And I guess you sure, I guess you think that. But even with the smallest people, some of the smallest guests I've had on didn't want to share the show. And I'm like, why? Like, I have, and I don't like thinking about it this way. I really don't. But it's like, my show has more downloads than yours. Yeah. My social media has more than yours. Why didn't you share it?
It's like, well, it's almost antisocial.
You have put me in a position to be so exacting about numbers, to need to pull that out, that it really drives me crazy. I think, yeah, it's incredibly rude.
I agree. It's incredibly rude. Okay. I said I was going to do this, and now I'm asking for it. Critique Creator Spotlight a bit on air. What am I? You've listened to some of the show. You're, yeah, on it right now. You're seeing behind the works. I want the criticism. I'm here. I want to make this show better. We don't have to spend like an hour on this, but a few things that you think I'm just totally leaving on the table or messing up. I would love to hear it.
I mean, honestly, it's hard having a guest-based show. It's just difficult. And as someone who has had a lot of guest-based shows in the past and also with Attach Your Resume, it's like, you have guests on in interviews and you hope they're good. And sometimes they are and sometimes they're not, for technical reasons or for personality reasons, or they're bad talking about themselves. It's just hard. And I really try to find ways to not only rely on the guests to do a good job for shows. I really recommend people who come through Multitude, either as the collective or with the studio shows that we make or the productions that we do, and be like, there should be two hosts. I really want there to be two hosts. So at least you have someone to bounce off of if the tech fails or someone's not good or something else or something happens. I don't necessarily. This is just an idea.
Funny you say that, because today somebody did accept an offer for the assistant editor position we've been hiring for.
Hell
and
yeah.
Part of the thing there is, like, maybe not every episode, but they will come on as a co-host. And I am a little bit inspired by what you and Amanda do, where, like, after the interview, right before you kind of publish it, you do that 7 minute or so intro we were talking about. And maybe that's a thing here, where now there's actually a dialogue. Because another person told me, like, I don't know who you are, Francis. Like, the guests come on every week. After they told me that is when I started doing, when we did the intro read today, I said my name and what I do, right? I wasn't doing that. So yeah, that's kind of,
especially as you being an interlocutor for Beehive, I think is also important. It's like, hello, my name is Francis. I am the front-facing Beehive person you're talking to. So, like, what is that? How do you meld with what I assume your media entity to be? I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
But, like, no, I mean, these are all just suggestions. I think it's a great idea. I'm glad you're hiring an editor. You need hire people to do good work for you is always something I say all the time. And the other thing was something I've already said to you is, like, this – although I see the beautiful menagerie you've created of media, but it's very fragile, as shown by the fact that this person was sick and then they were videoless. Like, then your whole video, all the stuff you need images for get borked. And I don't know, All the things I'm saying are just things for you to think about. They're not even, I'm not even telling you to change anything. It's just like you, it's just worrisome. You're already doing the stuff that the thing that's easiest to teach about pre-production is like, think about your choices.
Yeah.
Just think about your choices.
That's the one thing I can definitely control.
Yeah. And just so many people don't. And I think maybe the thing about podcasting, a lot of people either they are embarrassed they have a podcast because they think it's embarrassing.
Come on, it's 2025.
Exactly. Or this is like their seventh most important thing they do during the day. And they just don't make intentional choices. Francis, you're making intentional choices all the time. Your research is really good. You told me you listened to 5 hours of me talking yesterday, and that makes me feel really good. But also, I know you're prepared. So it's like you have made enough intentional choices that, like, I'm not trying to skewer your show right now.
Okay. Well, thank you. The research is like the one thing where I'm like, if I over-prepare, then everything will be okay. And, you know, especially a year ago when I just started, now that I'm a little more confident in what I'm doing, it's like I still do that research because it works. And it like makes sure that like because, you know, I don't have a producer live like telling me, hey, you're on this topic. Hey, we got to go ask this question. Hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. But me having like my Google Doc with questions that we're only going to get to 70% of them, like that allows me to have like a producer in my brain doing that. I want to ask you about your work though. Now, you just were gracious about this show. Tell me, start with Multitude, I guess. And then I want to hear about Attach Your Resume. But what even is Multitude? We haven't even talked about that.
Yeah. Okay. So Multitude is a podcast collective, studio, and ad sales provider. It's hard to describe because we started out making podcasts for ourselves that we had to teach ourselves. Our first show, Spirits, which is a mythology show that Amanda and Julia Schifini started back in 2015. And we started considering Join the Party, our Dungeons & Dragons tabletop RPG actual play show. We started considering it in 2016 and then launched it in 2017. Those shows we've been doing for even before Multitude existed, the collective. But Amanda used to was the employee number one and COO at a YouTube startup. So she learned how to sell ads and she's like, oh, I can sell ads for podcasts because even more than it is now, podcasting monetization was so nascent. You had to be a part of a network.
People didn't even know what a podcast was yet.
They knew. No. It's even more insidious. They knew what a podcast were, but they had no idea what to do with it. And then like a lot of people came in and be like, here, I'll do something for you. I'll just take your IP and most of the ad split. So it's like when Spirits pitched themselves to like Radiotopia and Max Fun, they were like, nah, you're not big enough and you're not my friend from high school. So I can't bring you on. So Amanda's like, I'll just sell ads for us because we're all going to conventions together and we're all friends. So let's just do it. And then that's where the Multitude Collective started from. We all do community events still now. We all do community events. We recommend each other's shows on our shows. We're in the same Slack. We help each other. But the split is always 70 towards the creator and 30 towards Multitude for our ad sales, no matter who we work with. But like, that's always been the whole thing we do. From there, the fact that we knew how to do podcasting, people started to hire us and we went full, and me and Amanda and Brandon Grugel, our head of production, went full time doing Multitude in 2019. That's also when we got the studio that I'm in, I'm in right now. And, you know, we made shows for Sony and we made shows for Netflix and we consulted with a bunch of different people and we do marketing. So it's like we have the collective and we have the ad sales and then we do all of the production we do for other people. So there's just like a lot going on. We have always been fine. I think a big thing that happened like 3 years ago, every single person declared podcasting dead. And we're like, LOL, we're still going to keep putting out weekly episodes.
We're still making a living.
The thing that we say at the beginning in every executive meeting that we have on Monday mornings is we say something that we were proud of doing last week. Mm-hmm. And then we say we didn't get laid off this week. Congratulations. Because we can't get laid off. We can only – the company can only kind of – not be able to do what it's doing.
You could lose a client. You could like miss an ad sales deal, but you've got multiple clients. You've got multiple ad sales deals going on.
And no boss can ever lay us off to crow about their bottom line and how they saved money this quarter. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What's the most important most significant part of your income or your revenue? Is it the ad sales or is it like the development with clients?
Honestly, in terms of just importance, they're starting to become much closer. Ad sales was a big driver of what we did for a long time because ad sales was booming before the pandemic. And like we lost all of our ad clients. People canceled 80% of their ads when the pandemic
hit. So did it go? I'm imagining for two reasons. One, like obviously people spending less because of the pandemic, it's an emergency, what's happening. And two, maybe oversaturation of podcasts like for a moment.
No, you got to remember companies are stupid and companies were like, we don't know what's going to happen. So we're cutting our marketing budget.
Yeah.
We're just not going to do it anymore. And we're like, okay, luckily at that time, and I'll say this anecdotally, but I think that this happens to a lot of people. All of our Patreons grew by 70 to 100%.
Wow.
Because in the part where like every, you know, remember where everyone was like, contribute to small businesses. Yeah. And I have so much Katz's Deli swag because of this. But I think that people recognize that their digital creators they loved were small businesses and they really started to contribute to that. I'm also like loath to say that we're independent, even though I guess we are. Like we don't have a corporate overlord, we don't have VC contribution. But like when people say indie or they say independent, they usually mean small. Yeah. And I don't think we're small. I think we are a medium-sized company doing it and continuing to do it. And we've never laid people off and we've never obviously failed. And Malcolm Gladwell doesn't work here. Like we're doing great. And last year was our best year ever. And I feel like this year is coming to it. There was once everyone said that podcasting was dead and then realized it wasn't. They're like, oh, actually, the shows everyone likes are the ones that create tons of community, that have really big Patreons, and just come out regularly. And more people want to work with us to make those shows for them, to let us sell their ads, to rent our studio, either this video set or the audio set. And it's just all working out.
If you're watching this and you want to rent their studio, was it multitude.co? What is it?
Multitude.production/studio, maybe.
So if you don't want to go back to 2018 and you think actually now is good and you're forging the future, I get the impression you're kind of living your dream career and like this is where you want to be. But I'm sure there's other things you would like to add, like in a dream world. What else is different? What else are you doing? How is it working?
The new thing I've been saying, because I've done a lot of reflecting on that question that you said, Francis, is like, obviously I want Multitude to keep growing. I love hiring people. I really do. This is what Ronald Reagan was talking about, obviously.
I really, a big Reaganite, but I'll take it.
Obviously Reagan was talking about the joy you feel of paying people what they're worth, right? Of starting a company and then not embezzling it. That's what Reagan was talking about. I really do love hiring people and giving them money to do their best work and like be a good manager. I've never had a good manager and I want to be that for other people and I want people to thrive. So hiring people in Multitude and having Multitude to continue to grow is that. The thing I've been reflecting on the most is I'm now saying I'm a part-time podcaster and a full-time podcast media executive based on the company that we've created around ourselves. Yeah. So it's like when I think, obviously I want to attach your resume to keep growing. Obviously I want to join the party to keep growing. I want more people to recognize I'm the best DM in podcasting, which is true. And lots of people are saying it. I'm saying it all the time, certainly.
I'll say it right now. You're the best DM in podcasting.
Thank you. Wow, Francis even said that. Clip it. Put it out there. Obviously I want our podcast to keep growing, but it's like, I want more time. I want all of us who started Multitude and who want to keep going. I want us to stop doing I wouldn't even call it grunt work, but like the essential elements that need to go into the creation of podcasts and allow us to go do other things that I think that we're best at and have so much vision.
This is kind of goes back to the Jack Conti problem of like he was just a musician and now he's also a tech CEO. And it's kind of the balancing, like I have to do this and I want to do this. And how do I do it all?
But I like being a media business guy. Yeah. I really do. That's why I'm so excited to be on this.
That's why we're talking right now.
Why I talk about this stuff all the time. Like I like seeing the vision of where podcasting is going as much as I do like preparing for a Dungeons and Dragons session.
Well, okay. I want to talk about the Dungeons and Dragons bit right now. So actual play. I know it's a genre of podcasts and streaming where the content is people playing tabletop games like Dungeons and Dragons. And I know you've got the podcast, Join the Party. And I also know that you said this on a recent episode of Attach Your Resume, that 3 out of the 15 top earning podcasts on Patreon are actual play podcasts.
Yes, sir.
Why?
And I will also say, when the Twitch leak happened a few years ago, Critical Role was the number one most subscribed to Twitch channel. So this is on Twitch.
So it's big. So I didn't even know the term actual play until I started researching you here. Why? Well, I'll partially answer my question here in asking it. So I get the sense that being a dungeon master itself is like is similar to being a podcast host. You're kind of managing these conversations. You are having to improvise, but you're also having to plan, and you're improvising based on this planning. Mm-hmm. Tell me what actual play is and why it's such a popular genre.
People really like storytelling, and there's something about the dual senses of watching someone role play a character and also be themselves on the show that just delight the things that the people who are online the most, like the people who make fan art and who write fanfic, they're these creative people. Just it lights up their brain to see this high wire act of theater and gameplay. They just really like
it. Well, it's this vulnerability that really rewards that parasocial relationship too, right?
Yeah. I mean, if I were like a mean 1980s executive, I'd be like, it's a parasocial machine, baby. Do it. It really is. And that's why you're seeing now, as the form has developed, people are using it as a parasocial machine. And we see this even from Dungeons and Dragons and from the marketing strategy of Dungeons and Dragons and Wizards of the Coast and their corporate ownership by Hasbro. Their entire marketing scheme is get celebrities to play Dungeons and Dragons. And also so many YouTube channels create second YouTube channels of make a Dungeons and Dragons show. But there's also so much more underneath it. I think the biggest problem that we have now is that people, especially people who got into this post-pandemic with the rise of Dimension 20, which I also want to say, I think Brendan Lee Mulligan is so incredibly talented. Mm-hmm. And also the production team at Dimension 20, like Rick Perry, the head of the minis department, who does all of the sets that they do, and also people who work over there. So I don't want to just be talent forward. I think this thing is incredible, but there's something about the way that Dropout has run their business awesomely, correctly, that so many people try to recreate and see actual play now as a springboard for them to become video game voice actors or become an actor in Hollywood. And I think that's kind of the thing holding us.
Well, this is what you were saying earlier when I asked you what's a creator, and you're like, it's somebody who, that's not their goal. Like, they want to do this on their own terms.
The number of times that I've seen people, and this isn't just actual play is the current thing that I think about. I remember when a really popular YouTuber who got laid off from the big media company that they were a part of, and that marketed, they made all their YouTube videos on the media company's YouTube channel. So like, people always acknowledge this, and maybe because I'm on the outside, I didn't get that. I say this on Attach Your Resume all the time. I didn't get that big job at BuzzFeed that I wanted so badly in the early to mid 2010s. Yeah. I never got that. So I felt like I was always looking at it from the outside.
You wanted to join the party, and now you run a podcast. I'll join the party.
Yeah, exactly. And I said this to Ryan Broderick, and he's like, yeah, it was terrible in there. And I'm like, I know, but here's what it looks like from the outside. It's like the marketing arm of these media companies were so massive. Mm-hmm. That you need to understand how there was such a supercharger for very good content, but also they treated their creators poorly and they laid them off. Like, I understand, but that's what it was, both a big power, terrible burden from looking from the outside. And I remember thinking about all these exit interviews that this guy got, this YouTuber got. And the first thing he said was like, I hate being on the internet. People want things from me. They have this parasocial relationship with me. I'm just going to move to LA and try to be a TV writer. And I'm like, don't say that out loud. Don't tell people that.
Quiet part out loud, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's very much quiet part out loud. Like, don't use the internet. You don't need to use the internet as a springboard to you moving to LA. Like, not being a TV writer in a movie and working on movies is not the panacea you think it is.
Like, that's cool, but that's its own job with its own problems that also is not stable.
And also, you could have just had better boundaries on the internet. Yeah. Obviously, maybe not this specific person, because he worked at a company and they forced him to do it and they didn't allow him to do what he wanted. That's also stuff he said in his interviews. But it's like, I'm really mad at how much, like, talk about podcasting, how many celebrities come into podcasting, mm-hmm. right? And, like, it's such a good way to, like, another parasocial machine, just in general, the whole medium of podcasting. You're speaking directly into people's brains. It messes with people's brain chemistry. That's just the truth.
Parasocial machine is so good. That might be the subject line of the newsletter.
Yeah, it is. And I'm like, but you could just do a good job on the internet and, like, live your life. Yeah. That's always the thing that I'm trying to do here at Multitude is, like, you can do a good job on the internet, be business savvy, and decide what goals look like for you. Yeah. And then you can just live the life that you want. If you
Something there. So I think one appeal maybe of going and being a TV writer, this probably isn't the main thing people are thinking about, but there's SAG-AFTRA, right? You can go and join this union and you can have certain labor protections. You can maybe have health insurance. If you're part of a company, sure, you also have that. Maybe you're not part of a union. If you're an independent creator, you're not part of a union. You're kind of more out there and alone, and it can be hard. But I do think you and I probably both agree that this kind of worker-owned media is the future. We've been talking about Rowan from Rascal. Yes. You guys, you work with Defector. That is kind of where, like, a model for this where you should go and want to start that, right? Like, it's not just, like, go back to the safety of, like, big corporate, right?
My only critique of the worker-owned model, and I think that it's, like, Defector did it and a lot of people copied it. Defector has been really great at sharing the resources of making it happen. Mm-hmm. And I think it emphasized, though, the issue that I've illustrated on Attach a Resume, that, like, once you get the job at the media company, so many people are, like, no new friends. They're like, I'm good. I'm never making a new friend ever again. And these worker-owned companies are just like my five friends who all got laid off together. And maybe that's part of the narrative. I learned that from David Roth from the interview. It's like, no, we need – that was our rocket fuel, but also it kept us ever from getting funding from a outside person ever again. And I'm like, yeah, that's something I didn't even think about, and you guys were the first one to do it. So I'm now understanding more what they're talking
about.
Well,
this is almost like – this is kind of a just a life cycle – you know, in the forest, a tree grows, a tree falls, it decomposes, another tree grows.
I say this all the time. We are in the decomposing tree and shoots era.
Yeah.
In not media all destroying around us, hopefully not if we can get out of these next few years. But the thing that has to happen next to go from shoots to maturing plant is if you have you and your four friends with your media company, I hope you'd... The person who does business is not the person who drew the short straw.
Yeah. This is one of my big things with Creator Spotlight is I try to encourage people who come from a business background to adopt, like, these idealistic approaches to craft and creativity, but also try to encourage and give a palatable way for more creative minded people to adopt these, like, business principles and business thinking. Because I think there's, like, there's still this, like, this idea of, like, I don't want to sell out on the creative side and on business side. Like, it's so easy to, if you're just so good at, like, you know, arbitraging attention into dollars, like, you maybe don't feel like you don't need to care about the craft and the creative side. So it's really my mission with this show to, like, encourage those people to meet in the middle.
I agree.
Okay. Attach Your Resume. You're at the end of season one. I think it was a little under 20 episodes. Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite, like, takeaways from these interviews? What did you learn? What's, like, the one thing where you just – you keep – hashtag, I can't stop thinking about this.
I really love Amanda's interview with Hank Green. Mm. Something that – Amanda has known Hank Green for a very long time. And I was so surprised in how Hank Green had never thought about so many of the questions that Amanda said before. His answers – are literally the first time that he's considered these ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something I encourage so many people. Everything I do is about intentionality. So all I do is tell people, think about this one time before you get into this situation, and then you'll be more prepared and you'll have a better answer. And I think that applying to someone who has started so many businesses and so many people love, I'm really excited that he got to think of some questions, some stuff for the first time. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest things when I'm doing this, where it's like, I generally don't interview people who've been interviewed so many times, but when I do, it's like, how do I listen to enough recent podcasts or interviews they've done? Like, how do I ask them the questions that they haven't been asked before? Like, if I'm just asking them the questions that they were asked 3 weeks ago, there's no reason for me to do this podcast.
Absolutely. I agree. And that's why, like, Jack Conte hadn't been interviewed in, like, a formal setting like that, other than, like, getting a quote for a very long time. So I was glad we got to do that. And I'm glad we do the CEO series. The CEO talking to a CEO, I think, is very valuable.
Absolutely.
The people who I end up interviewing the most, it's like I feel like I'm writing down modern media history.
Yeah.
I emphasize this a lot in that first episode with David Roth, how I kept quoting from the Washington Post doing reporting on what happened going from Deadspin to Defector. I'm like, this is modern media journalism history. I'm trying to get these oral histories down, honestly. And I feel really good about talking to, you know, people like Ryan Broderick, Taylor Lorenz, Geeta Jackson, Rowan Zaoli, and Roth to talk about what it was like putting these companies together. They might not have as much, like, you know, clickbaity titles, but I hope that people return to them and hear the story of what it was like for them to do the thing. I'm really excited to hopefully talk to 404 in the future, because they're 404 and Wired are kicking all kinds of ass right now. And I need people I need them to put on record what it's like doing right now.
Yeah, I love that. I think you're exactly right. And that's kind of one of the ways I feel about this podcast, too, is like, the type of people I talk to where it's like maybe they have 20,000 subscribers to their newsletter, their YouTube, and they're making a living from it. And it's like this model that, you know, only 20,000 people know about them, but they're doing it. And like, I want to get that down, which also on Tasteland this week, as we record this, we interviewed Catherine D, and she, that was her point, is internet history is always and has to be an oral history. We've kind of touched on this with like the failure of imagination, 2018, etc. There's so much to be pessimistic about always in the world and the podcasting space, whatever. Mm-hmm. To leave us on a nice note, what are you most optimistic about in podcasting and in digital media?
I very much think that we're in the dead tree and shoots growing under the dead tree way. Like I think it's a lack of imagination to think that we're all fucked. Obviously, I think that a lot from what's going on in the world right now, but from just a media perspective, it's like we are in the parts where the big thing is moldering and the small things are growing. Mm-hmm. And like that's I want people to read one business book one time, or even a history book one time. It's like there are cycles.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Washington Post and the LA Times and the New York Times are moldering around us, and other things are growing underneath. I think that things will change. Something will pop up. And the way that 404 and Wired have grabbed the attention of everyone, and we did not expect Wired,
yeah,
and
outlets
and nascent 404, yeah, tech outlets to be carrying the torch like this, but they absolutely are, and like it's getting borne out by seeing their subscriber numbers explode by doing good work. This is another thing. Like,
I'm a paid 404 subscriber.
Yeah, same, absolutely. The thing that I think the tech guys, the Silicon Valley guys want to do, and I said this before, and this isn't just that guy who's literally trying not to age by like measuring his boners his son's boners or whatever, but it's like they're literally trying to fight humanity the way humans work in order to enrich themselves. And like, you just can't fight it. People want stories. People want to pay for good things.
Shoots will always grow in a forest.
Yeah, exactly. And podcasting, I understand, is niche. I'm not even saying the podcast needs to explode or disrupt. I like podcasting for what it is. I just want to optimize what we have as best as possible and stop leaving so much money and attention on the table.
Period. No crumbs. That's it. Eric, thank you so much for coming on. Where would you like people to go and find your work, because there is so much work that you do.
Listen, if you need someone to help you make a podcast, come on over to Multitude. You can check us out. You can listen to my podcast, Join the Party, my Dungeons & Dragons actual play tabletop RPG show. I'm the best DM in podcasting. Listen to Attach Your Resume, where we do interviews with people in digital careers.
If you made it to the end of this podcast and you're hearing him say that, you're going to love Attach Your Resume. So that's a double plug for me. Right,
thank you. And yeah, follow me on Blue Sky. I'm Eric Silver. blue sky whatever it is over there. That's where I put all of my insane thoughts about video games. I just pulled in a god tier pack in the Pokemon trading card game app, and I'm really proud of that. So good job, me.
I'm proud of you.
thank you, Francis.
We'll leave it there. Listeners, I will see you next week. Thank you for listening.